All right, we'll reconvene council meeting, and let's do that by Councillor Lawton and I signing the oaths. What occurred was that normally the Chief Executive's name is on the bottom of the oath, and Lauren asked comms to put the chairperson's name, and they also put it in the document. And or pulled up the other documents. So that was the reason for the mistake. So
it's not the first time, Mr. Chairman. It's been one other time too.
Did it? Oh, right. There you go, Laurel. Oh. So, Councillor Lawton. Thank you. On to item 3, part B of our agenda, and the recommendations, and item 3 is the annual plan adoption. Mr. Donnelly, I might ask you initially, and then Councillor Brown as Chair of the Finance and Corp and Chair of the Hearings Panel to introduce that item for us.
Mr. Donnelly. Okay. There's, in your agenda, there is the summary paper on the annual plan, and attached separately was the annual plan itself. Obviously we didn't put it in the agenda because it's over 100 pages. This follows on from 2 weeks ago at the Finance and Corp Committee, where it was agreed to endorse the annual plan and put it forward to Council for adoption. There was a couple of changes that were requested in the meeting 2 weeks ago. One of those was around the Queenstown office, that making sure that it was noted that the desire is to have a full-time presence there, not an office that may be unstaffed more often than not. And the other change that occurred in Finance and Corporate was around the funding for Lagrosiphon, the $25,000 that had been proposed to be a sub-regional rate across Central Otago and Queenstown only, has been changed to be funded via a general rate across the region. So those changes have been made in the annual plan that's attached. Apart from that, the numbers are as they were. General rate increase is around $934,000, and all of the other various pieces have been well documented and discussed in the Finance and Corp Committee meeting 2 weeks ago.
Thank you, Mr. Donnelly. Councillor Brown, do you...
Probably not a lot to add. I think Mr. Donnelly summarised it pretty much, but yeah, I think the process generally overall went quite well. Obviously we consulted on through this document here on the six key differences from the significant differences from the long-term plan plus other new initiatives, and we heard 46 or something submitters, and the hearing panel made their decisions, and as Nick said, it came to the last committee round basically with the process and the outcome of that, with a couple of changes. So I haven't got much further to add to that other than I'll move the recommendation.
Oh, righto, yes, recommendations are on page 46, that the report's received, the recommendations of Finance and Corp be adopted, and the 2017-2018 annual plan incorporating the recommendations of Finance and Corp be adopted. Councillor Lawson.
I don't want to speak to the motion just yet, I just want an information point of clarification. On page 43, the bullet point connected with Lagrosiphon. It says funding of $25,000 be provided, but well, you know what it says, it's there.
Yep.
I just want to clarify, My understanding was that in our discussion that $25,000 was going to be doing Legosiphon on Lake Dunstan, and that that had been a sort of response to the additional funding that was going to be put in on Lake Dunstan's Legosiphon management plan or strategy from LIMS. That doesn't say that there, and I'm worried that that $25,000 can be diverted from Lake Dunstan to combating Legosiphon spread, which can be a large number of different things, but not fighting Legosiphon on Lake Dunstan. Can we clarify that, please?
Yes, it's intended for Lake Dunstan, was my understanding.
Yeah, that's my understanding too. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, very, very, very clearly. So we could probably add the word they provided for two LINs for Legosiphon control in Lake Dunstan.
Yes, if you could do that.
Or work being undertaken to reduce.
Yeah. Because it's just the way it reads at the moment, it could be an
education. It's not specific.
Exactly.
Yep.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that's right. I thought that we were talking about putting additional money in on the basis that the most important thing was the spread. We could do a limited amount in Dunstan, and it was the spread. Now, I suspect that your and my memory on this is probably equally fuzzy, but I'm just wondering if others had a view on that who were involved.
Mr. Donnelly, can you help us with the recommendations or minutes or the actual discussion at Finance and Corp whilst we seek feedback from other...
Mr. Chairman, I agree it was in response to the LINS offer for an extra $50,000. That was my recollection of it.
Which was Lake Dunstan focused.
Yeah.
That was certainly the discussion that the annual plan hearings panel had. Yes.
That's correct, but I think we might have got onto a better pathway about the Kawara going to Queenstown, an education process. But I support the Lake Dunstan part, but I think, I'm not sure.
Mrs. Bodeker, can you clarify for us, please?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right then.
Thank you.
No, I couldn't recall that was all. I'm happy with
that. All right. Councillor Brown, you're comfortable? Yes, and you've moved the recommendation. Seconded, Councillor Noon. I'll open the annual plan up for discussion. Councillor Hope.
I'd just like to say I think it's fantastic to see so many people that did submit. I think it is, as Ms. Bodeker pointed out, was this a record, was that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
It was very well received, and I had different people from different sectors that I saw over in different areas of Otago say to me they thought that this was very well put together, and you certainly had your chance to have your say. So I think that's to be appreciated.
Good, thank you. If I can just make a couple of comments. As we move through a year, there's a number of work streams that times come on tap, and in some cases new work streams, or are an adaption to an existing work program. And one example of that is the formation of Emergency Management Otago, and so a whole new structure and some extra resources there, and significant change actually in the way this activity is managed and funded throughout the region. And we all understand the risks around the Alpine Fault, but that's only one risk we've got in this region. There's a large number of them, but so they sometimes, as they develop during the year, get dropped. You know, we forget the focus and the work that's gone on behind the scenes when it comes time for this annual plan process that's occurred during May and June. So I just want to highlight emergency management, and there's a lot of good work going on and a significant change for this region. The other one is public transport in Wakatipu. There was a focus of activity some 5 or 6 years ago, and a 3-year trial was put in place with the aim of putting in place a commercial service. That was achieved, and that was due for review this year. But we brought that review forward 12 months. It's a significant chunk of work. The governance group has been reinvigorated in Queenstown alongside NZTA and QLDC and ourselves and the airport also. Actually, when you look at the facts, but under 3 years ago now, the transport plan, the regional transport plan, had no significant transport projects in it from Queenstown Lakes District Council. Right, the Kawarra Bridge was sitting there as a NZTA project. So there's been a response to the issues that we understand up there, and I just want to highlight the work that's gone on inside ORC to bring forward by 12 months, and hopefully we're essentially fit for purpose for an enhanced subsidised public transport system in Queenstown. It's not the end game, it's the start of, there'll be a lot of adaption over the years as the Wakatipu Basin continues to grow and develop. But, you know, to achieve, work through the at times tedious and ridiculously complicated planning processes to get the subsidised system in place, but we're going to be there in October, fingers crossed. Again, a significant chunk of work. The other one is reacting and or responding to community feedback and desire for moving for the first time in this region in any significance. We've done little projects here and there, and the community has done a number too, but for restoring some of our waterways. And we've identified three as a result of feedback from the community. And so that's a significant step outside our normal willow control, river, fairway management roles that we've been undertaken for decades. And I think that's good, and there'll be some interesting conversations as we move through that, and the work there has only just started, Dr. Palmer. The other one I want to touch on is our response to water quantity, and we've already had some conversations prior to morning tea around that topic overall. And we've had another round of meetings, and Mr. Bodick has put in place some dedicated staff resource with respect to deemed permit replacement. We had a meeting in Alexandra recently with a good turnout. There's a focus on minimum flow processes in a number of places through our region. But the sense I've got in the last couple of months is that the community is ready to move on these processes. Some of our staff informed me in the last couple of days that here's the workload coming, and they've had contact since our recent deemed permit forum. I've been with staff for the last couple of days and having these conversations, and it's so I just sense there's a bit of a tide turning there. We might be actually going to see some response. We need to be continuing to ensure that we've got the resources in place. We're going to have to be able to adapt as we move forward on that one. But you know, the message that 2021 is not far away, in my view, has sunk in. For communities or individuals, you know, it's easy for us to communicate that, go and talk to the stakeholders, but actually when you get back home as a landholder or an irrigator, what does that actually mean and how do I do that? So there's some significant, for some groups and some individuals, some significant assistance and guidance required. So it's not just a case of shoving some communication out there or coming along to a forum and listen for a day and go home and it's all yours. We're going to have to be, and I think this council is, supporting to make sure they get on that treadmill and work the way through that process. And so whilst there's been some tension in that area, and there will be ongoing tension around who gets water, who doesn't, what are the stakeholders up to, etc., I think I'm sensing and hearing that we're making some progress in early days, and So I'm pleased to see in this annual plan that we've got some extra resourcing there, and we'll have to keep a very good eye, not just annually, more than that, on what's happening, where the resourcing is required, and where the line is for us. So in summary, I think this annual plan is showing that we are, as an organisation, adapting to community needs. We're not here to please everybody. There'll be others that want more funding or more bus routes or whatever, but actually, overall, we've moved a significant distance. And for a regional council to shove an extra $900,000 into general rates and not actually have the queues at the door banging it down complaining, second year in a row, is quite an achievement. All right, and I'm not talking about an achievement from a sales pitch. It's actually the need is there, we're resourcing it, we're reacting, and there's clearly some acceptance of that. All right, you've heard enough from me. Are there anybody else that would like to? Councillor Lawton.
Thank you, and I think it's also indicative of the fact that the community's been asking ORC to respond, and it's somewhat relieved that there is that money going into the annual plan. Just going back to the Queenstown transport issue, and having sat with the regional transport group and had presentations from the QLDC side, there is a huge need to make sure that whatever planning goes forward now is actually long term. We have to be ahead of the game, and NZTA need to get with the plan about not just being responsive and in time infrastructure. We talk about Queenstown. Wanaka is going to hit a massive wall if we don't look out 20, 30 years. I mean, we're required to understand the growth within Wanaka in terms of land use and infrastructure for that amount of time for the rest of the, our three waters and all the rest of it for QLDC. So ORC need to be able to support the council to also do that with their roading, which we weren't. Sorry, I keep saying we whenever we talk about QLDC.
That's fine.
So, I really hope that the ORC can support the QLDC and being able to have the opportunity to look much longer term, because they're going to get in a whole lot of trouble. And I think even Cromwell is going to be in a similar situation if the council continues to only look at in-time infrastructure. On the river restoration projects, it's really exciting to hear, and I hope that whatever plans are happening there, I'll get up with the play, but the community, the opportunity for the community to work with the council and the likes of the Community Environment Fund from central government, to, you know, you can use that as leverage to find other opportunities for funding. And the resourcing for the council, I'm sure many of you were there when you heard Mayor Jim Bolt talk about the need for ORC to acknowledge that there is the growth happening in our region and the increased work happening with the likes of the deemed permits, and to look at the organisation to make sure that we fit the purpose. And the question about what is the Queenstown office actually going to do, good to hear that it's manned full time. I'm still questioning what is it going to do, and I'd love to see a sort of fuller explanation of the intention for that. I know that the Wanaka office is currently sitting not being used particularly much at all, and it's quite a significant depot. So yes, it's great that it's there, but you know, what's its purpose? So I'm interested to hear more about that.
Mr. Bodie, can you help?
And that's a good question. We've got a number of Central Otago, Queenstown bases. Wanaka's a good example. It's a depot, so its main function was to store equipment. We're not engaged in that activity anymore. So the storage requirements are surplus to requirement. We have a staff member based there. But his direction is given out of Cromwell, so he's essentially a Cromwell staff member who has a place to work out of Wanaka. You know, it was interesting when the chair and Dr. Parr and I addressed the QLDC meeting earlier in the year, and you were there, Councillor Lawton. The message I got from a number of the members of that council was, you know, we just need somebody who the community knows is ORC, and that's fine. How effective that is a question. How many people will bang on the door of a Queenstown-based office that wouldn't have done any other time to ask advice about a consent or a problem? I'm not sure. We had an issue that was raised through the annual plan, which was to do with planning and consents, and it was immediate. I got a phone call that had come through Councillor Bell. I deployed a staff member to that site within 2 hours, and it was resolved. And that staff member came from, in this case, our Alex office. So you know, this idea that we haven't been responding, I think, is wrong. The fact we're not there is right. You know, we had a staff member there. So, Councillor Lautner, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, we will put appropriate staff in there. We will put staff in there from Mr. McLean's team, who will be around inspections and, if necessary, enforcement. We will put staff there from a consents perspective, so they'll understand that. It's highly likely we will put our civil defence person there, but that hasn't, and I'd rather this wasn't reported, because we haven't had that discussions with staff yet. And certainly in the interim we may well have a transport staff member there, would be logical. So these jobs need to be done, but there is a cost of having an open office for 8 hours a day. And we're going to have to, you know, so that is a cost that's new to this annual plan that we're going to have to work our way through.
Councillor Robertson.
Yeah, excuse me. I just really wanted to thank the community during this process. It has been probably some of the best engagement we've ever had. Huge numbers of submissions comparatively. And I think it reflects that the community has put very clear values to us, and that they're willing to get their wallet out and really get behind those values. We haven't listened clearly enough, possibly in the past, could be one way of looking at it, but another way I think is that society is shifting a little bit, and people are willing to pay for the things that they believe in. Whether they're social or sort of cultural values or enjoyment of the area that they're in. They've clearly identified to us a number of projects where they're willing to do that. Water quality, all sectors of society will be contributing to that and are happy to do so. The Accelerated Flows program, same thing. Transport, lake snow research, restoration of lakes, wilding trees, and the harbour management plan. Some of these are projects that community have put to us for many years, and this council has said yes after listening to very good submissions and being a bit brave, I think. Some of these things we've said no to before. So I'm very proud of that and proud of our communities for persisting and clearly outlining what they are willing to spend money on. Something that's also emerging and really, really pleasing to see is the united and shared delivery and much stronger relationship with our TAs. So you touched before, Mr. Chair, on emergency management, but that is no small feat to get together and have an Otago unit. And is going to be really beneficial, I think, in terms of response for our community and planning. Public transport, particularly in Queenstown as well, that's been a shared type of approach, and I think going to be much stronger for it. And also planned derivation as well, urban water, and the way that we've been going about our planning is vastly improved as well. So I think there's some really strong themes emerging about the way we're working with communities. So thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Deacon.
Yeah, that last phrase is one I was going to pick up with Councillor Robertson. But first of all, can I thank and congratulate all the councillors who were involved in the annual plan hearings and decision-making or recommendation forming, I should say. I should have been part of that, but I wasn't, and I apologise for that, but I think the job was superbly well done. My main point, though, as I suggested before, picking up on that point, about 10 years ago, anybody assessing this council's engagement, whether it be external communications or receiving the messages from communities, would have given the council probably about 2 out of 10. It was poor, no question about that. Now I think we could probably say that we're around about 8 out of 10 in terms of our engagement success and our communications effectiveness. But you said, Mr. Chairman, and Councillor Robertson have just said how committed you are to this idea of engagement. I don't like the word stakeholder very much because I have never really had it defined satisfactorily for me. But we've got a community out there. We want them to know stuff. They have to know stuff for the progress of that community towards achieving the kind of strategic goals which we've set as a region in terms of resource management and the like. Now, the huge jump forward in responses this year to our proposed annual plan, up to, as Sharon said, record levels, I think that wasn't suddenly the community turning on a switch and saying, hey, we've got a regional council, let's tell them stuff. It was caused by us enabling them simply and effectively to tell us what they thought. It was an extraordinarily successful piece of communications design and implementation. I'm really impressed with the way our CE is committed to stakeholder engagement, and he keeps on displaying that commitment. And you, Mr. Chairman, have talked about increasing the resourcing for that activity. Well, we've now got a complete understanding and justification for why that resourcing should be there. Not without limits, of course, but what a success it is when you actually set out thoughtfully, strategically and cleverly to engage with the community. And that's what happened this year. Our previous Director of Stakeholder Engagement was a great operator, there's no question about that, and I still regret that she couldn't carry on. Ms. Poole's doing a stunning job as well, holding the fort. So let's keep to that commitment as a council. We need to keep on engaging, and we should define that in terms of not just telling folks stuff, because that doesn't work. It's enabling folks to tell us what they see, what they expect, what they like and what they don't like. And that's what this exercise has been all about. And it's been very, very well done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Deacon. Councillor Hope.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'd like to echo what you just said before. You said continuing to assure we have the resources. And I think that's a really important thing. And I also agree with what you said about our two big water plans. A, that we communicate, but also we guide. And they do need our guidance. I noticed that at a recent Strathtory a meeting there. They were still a little confused, I have to say, but there was Bruce, there they were, just saying we're right here to help you, and then you get again echoed in our water lines and our information that comes out, so we are doing some good stuff. Good to see.
Councillor Scott? All the key things have been said and I concur with them. Three things that haven't been said were maybe a level down. Was the OSC accepting the offer from the DCC to jointly resource a harbourside management plan. And that goes along with what Councillor Robinson was saying before in terms of working positively with the TAs. I mean, that's going to be fantastic. I hope we get on with that, because as long as I've been on Council, it's quite clearly an undermanaged resource, so there's potential there. I'm happy that at last, you know, we've managed to crack this dairy farm inspection thing now, where for the one fee we can visit a farm appropriate to risk, so you know, the high risk,
maybe we'll visit them two or three times. And to me, you know, that's been a roadblock for whatever reason. And finally, the, you know, the risk assessments for the rural water, I'm really looking forward to that getting on. I'm just a little bit concerned, though, with some of the language that's used, where the inference is that the risk assessment's just there to help the farmers. To me, it's more than that. It's actually fundamentally there to help the council get a steer on how the community is actually tracking towards its obligations. I'd hate to think that farmers would ever think that they don't need to be proactive and incrementally improve their situation. I'd hate to think that they're waiting for us to come along and advise them on how they're actually getting on, because that's not the way it is. So I think we just need to look at some of our language there. Thank you.
Councillor New?
Being involved in the hearing process for me personally was really valuable, and I sort of appreciated that opportunity to have a sort of a face-to-face process with submitters, and generally speaking I felt there was a good vibe around the region. The second thing is I really like the theme that's coming through with this organisation with regards to partnerships, delivering on some of our objectives, principles, etc., is in partnership with communities that either, you know, form a trust or an organisation, or, I mean, the Wilding Pine one is an example. We're getting good bang for our bucks when you look at what else is being spent by that community, and we're putting so much in, the government are putting so much in. So that's really positive. And I suppose the last thing, image or theme that I have of our annual plan process is around the rates increase and the acceptance from organisations which sort of sit on different and represent different people and sit on other ends of the scale, so to speak. You've got Federated Farmers over here saying, yep, you're focusing on core activities, that's great, get on with it. And you've got senior citizens saying the same thing. And that doesn't happen very often. So well done.
All right, I'm going to pop the recommendations, Councillor Kempton and then Councillor Walls.
Yes, look, I have little to add to the comments that have been made, but I remember about 3 years ago saying, and then it was a very slow thaw, that it was nice to see us listening a bit harder and not being so parsimonious. Now, we've had 2 years at about the same level of general rate increase, but I think that the public need to be well aware that, in fact, we've pumped a lot more into this plan than the rates increase would suggest. We've pumped a substantial amount of reserves into projects that we see having a fixed timeline.
Mm-hmm.
They may be development projects or something like that, but at the same time we've cushioned the blow significantly again through an increased contribution from Port Otago. And people also need to be aware that this isn't the end of it, and that will taper off, and that our general rates increases, assuming that our constituency says, yeah, keep doing what you're doing and do a bit more, will continue for 2 or 3 years at similar levels. That's really what we're looking at. And obviously we're going to be sitting here listening, and people will tell us whether or not they think we need to put the brakes on, but I hope they don't. But certainly we need to just keep in, the public need to keep in mind that we have injected a lot more than just what our rates increase suggests, and I'm thrilled to bits with it.
Councillor Laws?
Far be it for me to play maleficent at the baptism of this annual plan, but there is a wariness in the central Otago and Lakes area that I think I would be remiss in not expressing at this time and at this forum with regards to this annual plan. And I do need to express it. We are putting together an annual plan at a time of seriously significant involvement of communities now in their environment and the stewardship of it. We've never seen this in the history of this country. the level of public and community awareness and concern about the land in which we live and how we treat it, and its air and its waterways in particular. And the question then I always ask is, well, does the annual plan play a proactive role in preserving, protecting and enhancing the environment? And I'm not sure that we can say this with this annual plan. I've been struggling to see why, because I know that I'm dealing with a whole bunch of sincerely motivated people. But I think in part it's an attachment to the fact that you have a long-term plan that becomes your Bible for 3 years, and then you treat the annual plan as an amendment to it. And that is not the way that you should be approaching governance, in my view. Every 12 months you get the opportunity to remake your organisation and to remake your plans and programmes. And so I think the annual plan this year has just as much significance as your 10-year plan or your long-term plan next year. And that one of the reasons I think we're not as proactive as we should be in this coming 12 months is because we've convinced ourselves that we'll wait until the long-term plan. And I think that's one of the reasons for the impatience in my neck of the woods as to the Otago Regional Council, that it has waited and delayed and tarried too long. And this is one of those years, again, in which we are putting a lot of things out onto the long-term plan. Can I also say that I think there are some fundamental issues we've got yet to address. I look forward to addressing them over the next 12 months. The place of the port, that's been alluded to by Trevor. Listen, the reality is the port is underperforming in terms of its dividend to this council and as a company in terms of its return to the Otago regional ratepayer. And so I look forward to addressing that particular issue over the next years. And I also want to challenge this notion that we are a program people, that we do things, we don't think about things. And for that reason, I want to challenge this notion that this council has currently, including our senior executive staff, around the idea that we don't do science. We only do science that's practical, whatever that means. We have to step into gaps where there are gaps, particularly when they relate to the management and control of the Otago environment. And I want to challenge this council over the next 12 months to look down that line of stepping into gaps where those gaps exist, and not simply confining ourselves to the practical application of science within a calendar year. We've got massive challenges over the next 12 months related to the port, to pests, which I think we're laggard on, and that we need to be making much greater haste with respect. But also want to raise this issue of the HQ building, which is in this annual plan. It is largely seen by the public of Otago as a complete waste of their resources, their savings, their reserves and their rates. The idea that $30 million is at some time going to be allocated towards this, and whether we continue in this annual plan to try and develop that concept, is anathema to most of Otago. And I again have to say that I'm disappointed that that's even in here. I would have liked to have had a discussion with the new council about whether or not we're going to have one, and then what it's going to look like, and whether or not we should be leasing rather than wasting money on it in this respect. So I think those are qualifications that need to be added to this annual plan. I've long considered whether or not I should vote for this plan or I should stand or I vote against. It makes no difference what I do in that respect, so I'm not going to indulge myself. But I do want to express to this council an unease within central Otago and the Lakes about what this regional council is doing in our region and the inactivity that it has shown in the past and the need for much more proactive policy and control. Thank you.
Councillor Newman.
Oh, just in commenting with the Chairman, it's interesting to note that those that sat on the panel didn't bring forth this so-called unease that's supposed to be coming out of Central Otago. It's an interesting observation.
That's because they didn't listen to it.
All right, so we have a mover and a second for the recommendations. Everybody comfortable? Recommendations are on page 46 of your agenda. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against?
Carried.
Abstained from the resolution, thank you, yeah. Having not been involved in the process. Thank you.
That's fair. Yeah. We'll record that. All right, on to the next item, which is naturally a follow-on item for the rates resolutions. These are important part of the process. It's important that we get it correct. The auditor always has a good look at these ones. And Mr. Donnelly, do you want to work us through this recommendation and through this report, please, and that flows on to the recommendations on page 52.
Yeah, the report, it's largely in three parts. There's a summary report of the various rates that we've got, and of course naturally that flows on from the annual plan that's just been adopted, so it is just putting those into the various funding categories and what that means across the various districts. Then there is some summaries of rates across the districts as well. There's half a dozen pages there, and then on page 60, I believe it is the actual rates resolution itself, which is the key bit for council that in order for us to levy the rates in for payment in October, we have to pass the rates resolution. So then that formally lists the amounts across the various capital values that will get rated when we do that.
All right, thank you. Open it for discussion. Councillor Deeker.
Much as I hate being a pinpricker and a pedant, the Schedule 1 document on page 53, for no particular reason, I did some calculating of those figures, and I'm not entirely sure they're accurate. Take, for example, the amount of rate per CV for a property worth $500,000 in Dunedin City. I think that 2017-18 figure is about $50,000 out. Or maybe my arithmetic is shot to pieces.
50,000?
Yep. Oh, sorry, $50, I beg your pardon. If you add up the 2017-18 column, including the whatever indirect or direct lease benefit, the numbers just don't seem to calculate. I know I'm being picky, but it worries me if I find something like that which doesn't work, how correct all the other figures are.
It's that, but the 215-16.
Mr. Donnelly's just got his calculator out.
That's
so we're talking about the top graph, the DCC, on the 500,000 example.
That's right.
For 2017-2018.
That's correct.
Yep. The total's for 644 within the league, 173 out.
So I did the other table.
The
don't know what it is about universities.
How much out did you think it was?
Round about $50.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, I've actually done the calculation. I do have it out by 9 cents, but that's it. That's the 500,000 column for 16-17.
For
17-18.
Right.
Okay.
Two.
Oh,
I see. Yeah.
I think it's a year. It's tending to go down. It's because it's getting cheaper all the time.
What's getting cheaper all the time? Oh, the lease.
Yeah. the bringing it in well under budget.
Yes.
Yeah, I do as well. Have it out by 46.50. Yep.
They really like it. I'm sure they do.
Is it too high?
The total.
Well,
Is it over or under?
It's
over.
About $50 too much.
So the 173 is actually 120 something.
No, I made the 173 about 220.
Oh, right. Yeah.
We'll have a look at those. I mean,
yeah. They're appended for examples.
Yeah, they are the examples. They don't form part of the rate resolution itself.
They're not the rate resolution or the rate account.
No, but we should get it right, though.
Yeah. But we do need to get it right for public information. And
obviously Nick will need to check if it's just that one or it's the others as well.
I didn't see much wrong elsewhere. I couldn't see any other significant mistakes apart from 5 and 10 cent here and there. But that one was $50 out.
That's 5 and 10 cents is rounding sort of stuff, but yeah. I didn't check.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we should be doing this by committee.
No. But I think we'll get staff to check it and say the public record is correct. So, yeah. All right. Any further? Councillor Scott?
Yeah. I think if you'd asked me 5 years ago whether I'd be supporting a 14% general rate increase, I don't think I need to say any more. But it's, you know, it's fit for the times. And we have a lot of challenges. We've talked all about that. The part that stood out to me sort of follows on from Councillor Lawton's and Law's comment in relation to the apportionment, the percentage apportionment based on capital value for the general rates. And if you look, the apportionment last year had Dunedin City at 33%.
Which page are you on, Councillor?
48, the top table there.
Yep.
The apportionment last year had basically as I understand it, reading this, had Dunedin and Queenstown equal at 33% each in terms of the proportion of the general rates. Whereas actually, in this last year, the Dunedin has actually reduced by 2%, and QLDC has now gone up to 38%. So Dunedin and Queenstown, you know, were previously equal in terms of their general rate contribution, yeah? And now the QLDC, through their disproportionate increase in capital value, are now, say, 8% higher, which is significant.
In Central too, as well, too, Brian.
Oh, no.
That's in Cromwell too.
Central Otago, for example, their proportion last year was 12%, and this year it's 12%.
Yeah.
But it's the Queenstown one. And when you say Queenstown, I assume that's QLDC, you know, Queenstown, Wanaka, Cromwell, yeah?
Yes.
Not Cromwell.
Cromwell's in the Central Otago.
Central Otago, yep. Queenstown, Wanaka, yep.
Yeah. QLDC. But that's significant.
Mm. Yes.
And I think, to be fair, you know, despite, you know, some of the criticism, that this council has upped its game in those areas. Does it have more work to do? Of course it does.
So, Mr. Donnelly, you just remind us, it's in the report, but there's an equalisation process as each district is revalued at different time frames over a 5-year period, I think it is.
Three-year period. So some of those are current valuations, and then we equalise to apply a percentage to the ones that didn't have an actual revaluation this year. But what that reflects is the increase in valuations in that area.
Yeah.
And if you have a look, it's not that Dunedin values have gone down. If you look at the dollar value, it's actually higher than last year for Dunedin. What you're seeing is the relative growth in capital values across the different areas. That is one of the things, again, that needs to get looked at with the revenue and funding policies across the LTP. It was raised at the hearings around that. There is a couple of things that do happen. In the rates resolution itself, if you look on page one of that, you'll see that of the $6 million that is general rate that is based on capital value, even though Queenstown's sea capital values are higher. In fact, Dunedin is still paying $2.5 million of the general rate, and Queenstown is paying just over $2 million. Because we still have, within the general rate, we still do have some sub-regional portions of it that only apply to certain areas. So we do try to take account of the fact of, even within general rate, of work that is only being done in certain areas within the general rate, so that, for this example, you're not unfairly moving the rate onto just where those higher values are across the whole region. And the other thing that we did this year was, of course, the civil defence rate was a targeted rate. So again, that means that that's been apportioned evenly per household, as opposed to just being based on capital value, where in this case, you know, an area like Queenstown would have paid proportionally more. So we've looked at a few things that, you know, as the rates resolution page one shows, hopefully apportions the dollars as fairly as we can, but with the continued growth that's likely to happen in that area, it's definitely something that we need to look at with that revenue policy going into the LTP.
Okay, so the conclusion that I drew then was incorrect, yeah? So whereabouts is this, you know, the $2 million and the $2.4 million?
So that'll be on page 60. If you look, that's page one of the actual rates resolution itself.
Yeah.
Because the general rate is, from the annual plan, is 7.275 million GST exclusive. So that's about 8.3 million inclusive of GST. 2 million of that is charged as a uniform rate, and then the remaining 6.274 is charged based on capital value. But there's still some sub-regional components within that, so that it's not, you know, that some of the regions still get slightly more to start with, and then the capital value is applied.
Okay. No, thank you. It's been informative. Maybe that table should be part of the main report as opposed to the other one, if that's what the real outcome is, as opposed to highlighting the percentage apportionment. That's what the outcome is.
Councillor Bell.
Yeah, it's probably what I'm thinking, but it's Dunedin, it includes Mosgiel, doesn't it? It's not in the other one. Yeah.
Yes.
It's interesting that that the Dunstan constituency pay will be contributing 2.7 against Dunedin at 2.5. So we, as a constituency ward, we're ahead of Dunedin City now. And the general rate on the table.
More rural land.
Councillor Lords, did you have a hand up?
I'm just asking, on page 60 you've got the rating resolution for adoption, you've got the general rate outline, and you've conveniently broken it down into districts, so the six districts.
Yes.
Six, isn't it?
Five
that make up our constituent whole. Can we do that for total rate? Because So you've done it for the general rate, and you said, well, this is how much is coming out of Central Otago, Clutha, Waitaki, etc. Once you've added it all together, can you do that for all the rates as well? Because that table's not here.
Yeah, all the other various rates there are broken down into the districts as
they
well.
Are,
so
they are.
So yeah,
but we used to have a sort of a total quantum.
Do you want to amalgam at some point?
Yes, because just this week I read that, and I thought I must ask that question because it's relevant to this. That the value of property in the Queenstown Lakes District Council now is greater than the value of property in Dunedin City.
That wouldn't surprise me. It's been very close for a number of years.
It's like 8% more.
And that's what page 48, Scott was talking about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, yes, to buttress Graham's view, there's more money coming out of the Dunstan area reflective, presumably, of the higher capital values of those properties, is that right?
Well, no, that's the discussion we just had, is that the capital values are higher in Queenstown than in Dunedin, but in fact we've still got the majority of our general rate is still coming out of Dunedin. It's 500,000 dollars higher than Queenstown. But then, as you can see, there's all the other rates, the targeted rates, are broken down separately there. So we'd have to go and add all of those.
Could it be possible?
At some stage, I'm sure. Yep. Yeah.
Well, I mean, wouldn't you put that in your annual plan? Publish it in your annual plan? These are the total rates from the areas. Have you been good enough to break it down into detail for smaller things?
Well, we've broken it down by rate. We just haven't done it. I don't believe we have a total by district in there, but I mean we can prepare one.
Thank you.
Councillor Kempton, that's all you're up.
It's a little consequence. I mean, it's relatively academic, the number. I mean, the number can be used in two ways. It can simply say that it's reflective of the services provided, given that there is an equalisation situation over land values, or the other thing is to say, we pay this much, we expect more. So it's kind of academic. The reality is that you pay for the services you get largely around that targeted area, and for those which are spread evenly, there's an equalisation process. So I don't know if it's of any consequence.
When you do add the targeted rates, and of course the bulk of the targeted rates, you've got the transport rate, which is $4 million in Dunedin, and you've got the leak, which is another $1.5 million. So when you then do it on a district basis, it'll boost what's being spent in Dunedin, as Councillor Kempton said, because of those specific pieces of activity that are happening there.
And the other large targeted rates are flood and drainage schemes in the Clutha and, again, Dunedin City. All right. The recommendations are on page 52. Councillor Brown?
I just want to make a comment. I always find this quite interesting when you go through these indexes and looking how the rates are affecting different people, different capital values, different districts and all that. And
yes,
the conclusion I come to, generally, our rates are still pretty affordable. And when you look at them generally across the board, I think the rural sector is probably the biggest increases with 6A, but I think they're pretty affordable. And it's interesting what Councillor Noon said, like, we didn't actually get too many submissions complaining about our rate increase, which I thought was interesting.
Did we get any?
No, we didn't get any.
It was one or two, but
was
that? Yeah, probably one that was just written on the bottom, not many at all, which I think, hopefully that reflects the community, think they're getting value from what the services we provide.
Are you happy to move the recommendations, page 52? That the reports received and that the attached rating resolution, which is page 60 on it, for the 2017-2018 year be adopted. Seconded, Councillor Noon. No further discussion. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Abstain. Carried, and we'll note Councillor Lauder's abstention. Thank you. And again, thank you to Doug and the work that you did on the way through that piece, but most particularly the staff that have pulled all this together, and we'll appreciate the work there. Alright, on to the next item prior to lunch is the review of the committee structure, page 68. Let me just get myself to page 68. Doink. And so this is an outcome from when we put in place, as the report says, our committees at the start of the triennium, and we were asked to, in June, review the structure and committee names in June, and I've pulled the report together. I just spent a little bit of time in the first paragraph under discussion just highlighting the changes that had occurred in the last two or three or four trienniums. So we have been reacting at the start of the triennium to either changes in direction the council wanted to make or workflows or indeed changes at the director level that the chief executive had made. And so I won't repeat that for you. We have also responded to what has been seen as good practice and put in place an audit and risk committee at the start of the last triennium. It took the first 12 months of the triennium to get it up and running, but we have an audit and risk in place as subcommittee of finance and court with an independent chair, as you're well aware. I wasn't aware of any from a structure and names which was what we were directed to or asked to review, perspective of any issues, so have recommendations of the reports noted and the structure and committee names remain unchanged. We'll deal with this report in two parts, and we'll start with that part, open that up for discussion for a start off.
Is that committee membership?
No. No, that's the item one.
Structure and names.
Structure and names.
Yeah. Can I just, I just want to raise the issue of the Audit and Risk Subcommittee now that, I mean, I don't know that it has been adequately reviewed. I just wanted to say to all my fellow councillors that I continually feel uncomfortable on that committee by being there and you not. I think audit and risk is a function for us all. And although audit and risk reports to, as a subcommittee, to the finance committee, it seems to me by its very nature and because of the issues involved, being so complex and also so important, that it would benefit from us all being there. Now, I don't have a problem with having an independent chair, Stephen. Okay, that's fair enough. Useful. But I just think that it would be nice to have all councillors as member of that Audit and Risk Subcommittee, and that it's not an onerous task to tack it on to our committee members, onto our committee meetings. I'm also concerned that it only meets every quarter, or that's the projection, when I think that it would be useful to have as... you always need to keep abreast of particular risks and developments and things like that as part of our natural round. So I'm just flagging that with you now, Stephen, because I think that, yeah, it would be nice to have us all sitting around the table discussing the audit and risk and being able to put that into the weekly round as perhaps a subcommittee of the Finance Committee.
Yeah, I'll come to you in a tick, Mr. Bodigan. I think Councillor Brown wants to speak too. We spent quite a bit of time putting this subcommittee in place. The terms of reference do say that all councillors are able to attend. My understanding is that the agenda is circulated to all councillors, yes. And but, you know, what was seen as best practice around, primarily coming out of the private sector, is a subcommittee with a smaller focus group. In the commercial sector, but around boards of directors, often there is a much smaller membership there, you know, 5, 6 or 7, and they can be committees or subcommittees of the whole, chaired by another member, not the chairperson. But in the case of local government, where we're dealing with, you know, 10, 12, 14 councillors, and they're getting into some detail, it was the guidance we received was that a smaller, more focused group, and this council decided that, you know, all councils were able to attend if they wished, was the way to go. Mr. Bodecker?
Yeah, well, I was just musing on the comment that Councillor Law said about being tacked on to the end of Finance and Corp. I mean, to me, what would be the difference? Apart from the independent chair, many of the items that are discussed in Finance and Corp have an element of risk assessment, and they are detailing and analysing the financial performance of this organisation. So I think we'd rapidly, if that's how we did it in practice, we would rapidly say, well, these are one and the same meeting, and then the issue comes about whether or not we have the independent chair. I think my observation, having seen audit and risk operate in the private sector and now here in the council, is that there are discussions of an audit and risk committee, even though in our case it is open to the public, that are in a significant amount more detail. And it allows an interaction between the appropriate staff, particularly senior staff, and the governors, which may not happen in a committee meeting, which from time to time we are pushed for time. Now, we spend, for those who know, a significant part of half a day on audit and risk, and I don't think we're not wasting time. That's an appropriate level of discussion, and certainly, if you've observed my report that I do for health and safety, It's in a lot more detail at the audit and risk meeting than it is in my report here. So I think that's the nature of an audit and risk.
Yeah. Councillor Brown?
I basically concur with what you and Mr. Bodrick have said. I think probably, yes, as you mentioned, there's probably more people look at it in the private sector and how it works there. And I think there's no doubt about it, an audit and risk committee is where you get down to the detail and you're dealing directly with the auditors or whoever, and it's just more functional to do it that way. But at the start of this training, when I was as chair of the Corporate and Finance, we made it very clear that everyone was welcome when we approved the terms of reference, and no one else has turned up yet. So I don't know what that says about it. But I think in some ways the rest of the committee actually sits in judgment of the Audit and Risk Committee to some degree. And I know in some private situations the chairman of the board may not wish to be on the Audit and Risk because they're very closely connected to the day-to-day management and they want to be seen to be independent of the Audit and Risk. So, you know, that is a view that's held by some. So, I don't know, everyone's welcome and they can partake in the discussions but not vote. That's the only difference.
Mm-hmm. All right, there's other committees as well. We shouldn't forget about not just focus this discussion on audit risk. Councillor Kempton.
Oh, no, I just concur completely with Councillor Brown's views. With an audit and risk committee, there is an opportunity to bring together a membership that has some which contains some specialisation for other kind of things that are being dealt with. I think that we'd be kidding ourselves if we got a full set of annual accounts and every councillor went through that line by line and page by page, which one might expect an audit and risk committee to do. First of all, there would be some of us who would not be particularly au fait with what we're looking at and be able to make the kind of judgments that are necessary in that particular specialist area. But on the other hand, one of the things that we need to be careful about, and it's one of the things that I would have to say the private sector tends to do differently, is that they trust members of subcommittees. They say, we've put that membership together with these skills and these objectives, and we will therefore take their recommendations and have a good look at those, but probably a better than even chance that they will be accepted. But those recommendations have to be there with just enough flesh around them for people to be able to make that final judgment in the wider council. So I absolutely agree with what Councillor Brown says. I think this will be a major step backwards to bring it into Finance and Corp, because one might then ask why the hell have you got one? I think it would be a major step backwards to change anything about that. We can get better at doing it, no question, but I think that the structure should stay.
Mr. Scott?
Just to note that I think the situation, I haven't actually attended an audit and risk subcommittee meeting, but I think the situation that we're in at the moment is already a compromise situation, because if my memory's correct, when it was first established, I don't know if it was necessarily understood that every councillor could actually attend. And even if it was understood, the mechanism wasn't there to enable them to attend. For example, not all councillors were emailed, you found out about the audits and risks, the following week. So those things have been addressed. The door is open. I think we've reached probably a reasonable situation.
Is there anybody with a contrary view to what I've communicated in the report there, that our current committee structure and names are fit for purpose? No? All right. For the with respect to expediency of time, I will move the recommendations that reports noted and the structure and committee names remain unchanged. Is there a seconder for that? Councillor Deegan? I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. What was that electronic? Tweaking. Don't know. Yeah. All right, on to the next one, committee membership. So we have full council reinstated.
We've had a deputy chair running the technical committee meetings. It's appropriate to look at this point. And also with a new councillor elected and now sworn in, the membership of our reference groups. With respect to reference groups, I have spoken to Councillor Lawton and she is happy and interested to be a member of the Biodiversity and Urban Water Quality reference groups. The other point I noted with respect to the committee chair's role that we're 9 months into a triennium and a new councillor, whilst the new councillor does have some local government experience, I think there's a period of time to allow Councillor Lawton to get up to speed with OSC and how we function and our different rules and policies, etc. That's the basis for my recommending that Councillor Lawton is elected as the deputy chair of the technical committee. And my recommendation is that Councillor Noon be elected as chair. Councillor Noon's a experienced local governor, has some practical background as a landholder, and would, I'm sure, work with the director and has shown an appetite in his 9 or 10 months on this council for a workload and be able to handle that. And we understand his significant experience with as a former Dunedin City Councillor. So I'll open that up for discussion. Councillor Scott.
I'd just like to refer to the reference groups.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm actually pleased in terms of my experience with the reference group so far.
Yes.
Relatively pleased with the progress and the fact that we're doing them. The only point that I'd like to make is that a plea that the reference groups all be treated equally and resourced sort of equally. So, for example, on the Urban Water Quality Group, you know, we're tremendous resource, you know, and staff, there would be minutes, key notes were taken, so there was a structure moving forward, and for example, I'm involved in the PES, and I just don't know if that same resource, CE, is necessarily available, so I just gently make that point.
So I can respond to that. They're clearly different work programs and at different stages. So I imagine the urban water quality will, once the strategy's in place, you know, things will change there too.
Yeah, I wasn't talking, just talking, and I understand with the PES is that its main focus is in the next financial year. So look, it's not a criticism, but it's just,
right.
I'm just making the point though, that, you know, myself as a councillor, I turn up to a reference group, I would expect some staff resources there. Poor old Scott's there on his lonesome. I just make that point in terms of who's paying for what in the background. I'm not, as a councillor, you don't actually have that opportunity very often to say something like that, and I'm saying it.
Right. Councillor Noon.
A brief comment. Supporting Councillor Scott, we do feel a little bit like the poor cousin, but however, we acknowledge that 1 July is when the budget kicks in, so we are hoping that there will be greater support as we move forward into the, I suppose, the business end of the review of the pest management strategy. But I won't say any more than that because it's an operational matter.
Yeah, that's fine. Councillor Laws.
I've discussed this before within this group, but I don't understand when the council sets up a pest working party why it doesn't immediately start that day. So if someone can explain that to me, that would be great. We make a governance decision to set up a pest working party. Well, that's a direction for staff to resource it, surely.
in answer to that, the project itself starts in the next financial year.
No, we've been having meetings of the working of the group prior to now, and you set up the first working party in February or January of this year.
Yeah, but the actual review of the PEST strategy starts in the 17-18 financial year. And so there's been some initial thinking and shaping up and discussions, and we're fit for purpose and underway from 1 July. Yeah. The funding for that review is in this coming financial year. Councillor Robertson.
Just reminding us all that we're talking about membership and structure, not resourcing today.
Thank you.
Good point. Just around membership, just a very small point, but it probably sends the message that staff are involved in these groups as well and are equal members.
Yes.
So as well as us noted there as councillors, it's probably important that we note that the staff are there as well.
Yep.
But overall, I think the membership is pretty good. I suppose one point would be the crossover between biodiversity and pests, potentially, but if we keep informing each other, then that's good. But it may have been good to have some crossover there. What else was I going to say? I had the main point, which is always the case. You forget the main point by the end. It'll come back to me, I'm sure. But I was pretty happy with the structure and the... there is something. Sorry, it'll come back to me.
That's all right.
Just noting, Mr. Chairman, that case reference hasn't got off the box yet, but it's been for a variety of reasons, and staff resources being busy on the plan. We haven't just to go to the plan, but it is.
No, but I think Mr. Barika, we're ready to move, am I correct there, and jointly with Environment Southland?
Yeah, certainly on the coast that's the case, and I mean, you know, comments that I've heard, I mean, I'd like all of the councillors on the reference group to actually read your terms of reference. I want to have a discussion with you this afternoon. I think they are now project groups. I think the expectation and the practice of these reference panels, reference groups, you're moving into a project. And if that's your intention, you need to change the terms of reference and you need to inform me. If they're not your intention, please read the terms of reference and maybe we can have a discussion at another appropriate time about them. But, I mean, while work is being done and good work is being done, the process... the involvement in the executive team is certainly not there. That's a concern.
All right, let's talk about that later.
Well, isn't it time to talk about it now, Stephen? Because the review has set up references, you're trying to pass the new committee structure.
Yep.
The process should be, I would think, now. So let's get that sorted out and let's satisfy the chief executive as to the governance.
Give them
the correct instruction.
Yep.
Yes, point 4 on the terms of reference highlight that it will have a defined time frame and point of process. So where is that detailed?
That sits with each reference group for their specific project.
It's almost logical.
It is.
So I was wondering if we could pick this up afterwards and whether they didn't have those terms of reference and be able to set up project groups, because I think we're impatient and pissed to do something.
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, the councillor just called it a project group.
Yeah.
Well, no, I took your terminology.
No,
he wants one. That's the same.
Can I just ask one question about the difference between a reference group and a project group, and why you felt the need to... say, well, actually, if you're, it would appear that those groups are working beyond their original terms of reference. That might be the case, and they're taking on a life that was not quite expected. Am I outside expectations? Have I got that right? And could you explain a bit more about that better?
Yeah, the recent document from the Urban Water Quality Group was signed off by the reference panel. It wasn't signed off by by, normally it would have gone through the executive team, and when the executive team saw it, it was already in the public domain. So that says to me that the reference group took on the role of what has historically and traditionally, and I would have thought normally, been the role of the executive. So what is my role as your chief executive at asking questions about that document once the governors, in this form the reference team, have signed it off?
So what you're saying is that the relationship between the councillor component and the staff component of that group and the authorities therein, with respect to those, things are not going along as you would have expected. I think that that's potentially the thing we've got to just disassemble and put back together.
Yeah.
Because if we were to reflect on that, would we say, from a governance point of view, we haven't quite done that right, therefore we'll go back to where we were, or no, we'd like to change? That's the fundamental question.
Yeah.
In the territorial authorities, they would normally set up a working group, what they call a working group. And the working group responsible for that, develop policy and bring it to the appropriate committee. I understood that that's what the reference groups were doing.
And that's what the terms of reference say. The group's role is to develop first cut principles and define scope of council policy, resource plans or project.
Yes.
And the reference group will report its work or recommendations to the relevant council committee. Councillor Robertson and Councillor Scott.
Yeah, that was my other point that I'd forgot before was, whether it's actually part of this discussion today or membership or not, but the reporting back and the onus on the reference groups to do that and getting that right, we need to work on, I think. So we haven't had any real formal reporting back, I don't think, come forward yet. And at what point will it? And I hear what Mr. Bodick is saying on that, so we do need to clear that up a bit. But it's not part of today's discussion.
It's more of, my sense is it's more of how it's operating rather than terms
the
of reference.
Structure and involvement.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Councillor Scott?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure whether I should say anything because there's a contradiction I sense there. I mean, are we talking about how it's operating?
Yeah.
Am I able to reply to Mr. Bodicker's point?
Yes.
Okay, firstly, in terms of the urban water reference group, if there's been any process that's been incorrect, then I apologise. I will point out, however, though, that yourself, Mr. Bodicker, from time to time you were actually on that group. We do have two members of the executive team on that group, plus another number of staff. And certainly from the governance involvement in that group, it's always been emphasised that, we're there, we're assisting. We just appreciate being part of the process. If that needs to be tweaked, then hey, let's talk that through.
Councillor Lawson?
Just a point of clarification that if any of the other councillors were interested in going along, for example, there's a great point by Gretchen around the pest biodiversity link.
Yes.
Are the reference groups open to other councillors being there? And if so, in what capacity to take part in the conversation?
I'm not sure we had covered that. And so there's nothing to say you can't, but there's nothing to say you can.
I would like to suggest that I will be interested in attending some of those other, is even just to get a better understanding about how the process is going and what information is being provided to inform those principles based that first cut.
Yeah. Anybody else feel on that one?
Well, this is where you go, this is where you've got your problem with your working party, and I think you've got to rename them. If they're working parties, then there's a structure, you've got it all set up,
it's got a mechanism. I still don't know how the reference group works and the process that it works. I also would like to see, there must be broad minutes of each of these meetings or at least broad outlines of what's decided in them, and I'd love to know what's happening in some of those other reference groups that I'm not there, so that I'm informed as well. So maybe you, every 6 weeks you put them into the committee and you have a reference group update or something like that, Stephen?
Yeah, well, I think that was what was intended.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so... Yeah.
So I think that if any, but gosh, any council won't go to any council about this. Such an enthusiastic young councillor.
All right, where are we up to? Councillor Noon. I'm not sure how we stop it.
I've been picking this up and it's been stopping.
Why is it stopping, not stopping?
Yeah, I'm not sure. But it is. There must be a message coming from the phone somewhere.
It's not mine.
No. Councillor Scott.
Look, I think we've got a CE session this afternoon. Maybe we should continue the discussion in terms of mechanics at that time. One of the key things that we've had to determine here today is the recommendations. And, Councillor Noon, I believe is a very worthy candidate.
Seconded, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and that's Councillor Lawton as deputy, and Councillor Lawton appointed the Biodiversity and Urban Reference Group.
Yeah, so I'm happy to move those recommendations.
Any discussion?
Can I make a point? Initially, when I saw that, I had considered... looking to possibly take up the chair role and to put my name forward, but after speaking with Andrew and I am happy and look forward to working with you as a deputy and really look forward to getting a good understanding of how they work and contribute to that. So thank you. Yep.
Thank you. All right, I'll put the recommendations. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. We'll stand adjourned and the photographer is going...